Hello, my name is Dan Rhodes. A number of years ago, I was entertaining the idea of joining the Chamber of Commerce. So I picked up the phone and spoke with the director of membership. And in the conversation, she had asked me what it is I do for a living and what section I wanted to be in the business directory. Well, my answer is that I'm a technology architect. I design, implement, and manage anything that touches the corporate data network and a few things that don't. And I'll get into the few things that don't at a later time. She stated to me that she'd never heard of a technology architect or technology architecture and asked me to dive in a little deeper. If you are a business owner, a business manager, or you're thinking about starting a business, I would encourage you to stay with me over the next few weeks as I explain the difference between buying technology products and buying a technology solution through the process of technology architecture. In the conversation, she had mentioned to me that there was a company that was a member of the chamber that had purchased a piece of software, business software, and I believe it was customer relationship management software, or CRM, something to the tune of about $33,000. The company had gone through a rigorous process of interviewing multiple vendors, taking a look at the benefits of the software, and when they went to implement the software, they found out that their computer network was not compatible. As a matter of fact, it would take an additional $56,000 to upgrade the computer network to be compatible with the software. Well, that $56,000 was not in the company's budget. Back then, 10, 15 years ago, software was not in the cloud. It wasn't a monthly membership that you might be able to cancel. It was delivered on a compact disc or CD in a box, and it was non-refundable because it is intellectual property. So the end of that story is a piece of software, a very expensive piece of software, sitting in a box in a bookcase behind the CEO's desk. So I want to take a couple of minutes and tell a story that's going to seem like I'm digressing, but it all has purpose. So I encourage you to stick with me. When I was in high school, I was sitting up late at night studying for a test. And my dad, who is a mechanical engineer, came out at 11:30 to midnight and asked me what I was doing sitting at the kitchen table. I told him that I was studying for an algebra test and I was trying to memorize the formulas. And my dad looked at me and told me probably the most profound thing he's ever said to me. He said, "Dan," he says, "you can memorize the formulas and you might pass the test. But if you learn why it works, you'll never forget it." It was from that very statement the definition of technology architecture was born, and that's learning why it works. If we go back to the story about the company and the software, and it's not an uncommon story, it happens all the time, and we ask ourselves, what happened? What could have been done differently to avoid that? We might conclude that it was the pinpoint focus on the software that caused the problem versus taking a holistic approach and looking at the entire network. If we were to put a definition to the term network, it would be communications between two or more devices. The first U.S. voice network was created in 1885 by American Telephone and Telegraph. The infrastructure was copper and the technology was analog. Analog communications networks serviced the United States and the world for over 100 years. Somewhere right around 1969, computer networking was born. So in the corporate world, there was two different networks. There was a voice network and a data network. There was a voice technician and there was a data technician. There were times that the two networks crossed over, but rarely did they play well together in the same sandbox. Right alongside the development of the analog copper networks was a technology known as fiber optic. In 1977, the city of Long Beach, California was the first U.S. city to use fiber optic cable to transmit voice communications throughout the city. Since that time, fiber optic cable has become the infrastructure of choice for carriers to transmit large amounts of voice and data traffic between U.S. cities and around the world. AT&T maintained a monopoly on U.S. voice and data communications until 1982, when the U.S. government broke the country up into seven different regions and issued licenses to seven different companies to operate within each region. These companies became known as regional Bell operating companies or local exchange carriers. AT&T maintained the ability to carry long distance between the regions and around the world. As a part of the AT&T divestiture and the creation of the seven regional Bell operating companies, or RBOCs, there was two specific stipulations that I'd like to go over right now. The first one was that each regional Bell operating company was required to provide voice and data communication services as a utility to any legitimate business or residential address within their region. The second stipulation was it opened the door for additional competition. In the late 1980s and early 1990s, companies known as Competitive Local Exchange Carriers, or CLECs, entered the market. They were able to purchase last mile or copper circuits from the regional Bell operating companies at a wholesale rate in order to provide voice and data communication services to businesses within their region. At this time, we also need to mention the cable TV entertainment companies that started offering internet services in the late 1980s and early 1990s. Okay, let's assume for a second that you've survived the last 3.5 minute, 50,000 foot overview of the history of voice and data communications here in the United States and for much of the world. So what does all this have to do with technology architecture, and why is it important to businesses small and large today? The answer to that question is that we are once again in the middle of a historic change to the voice and data communications industry. This historic change has been titled as digital transformation. So over the next few weeks, we're going to take a look at this term, we're going to dissect it piece by piece, and we're going to analyze the impact it will have on how business is done. Okay, I think it's time to have a little fun. Let's assume for the sake of conversation that you were given the responsibility of building the corporate voice and data network. What would be your logical first step? Would you like a little time to think about that, or would you like the cliff notes? Well, since this is a one-way conversation and I can't expect a response, I'll go ahead and give you the answer, and that's define. We want to take a look at what we expect the corporate data network to accomplish. The only way to get the right answers is by asking the right questions. I have a short list here. This is by no means an exhaustive list, but it might give you a few ideas of where to start. You might ask a question like, how many locations does the company have? How many users at each location? What business applications will reside on the corporate data network? And here's one that's very important that gets missed so many times. What is the corporate network security policy? It's not until you ask yourself an exhaustive list of questions like this that you will be able to determine the requirements for your corporate data network. But now we have to bring this digital transformation into the picture. I got to take a moment and stop and explain that the local and long-distance carriers have petitioned the Federal Communications Commission and received permission to begin retiring the copper networks and replacing them with fiber optic. Local carriers are no longer required by law to provide voice and data services to addresses within their region. So this means that the process is now open bid. There might be 2, 3, 5 different carriers that have the ability to provide services to your address. It also means that your business might be 2 blocks or 2 miles off the communications grid. Getting voice and data services to your address may require a very expensive construction process. So, before you sign that lease or that mortgage for your new location, contact CT Solutions so we can take a look at our over 300 plus providers and identify the carriers that would be available to that address, what services they offer, and at what cost. CT Solutions can be reached in Southern Utah at 435-359-1057. That number again is 435-359-1057. In Northern Colorado, it's 970-493-4154, or nationally at 888-801-8569. And coming very shortly will be our brand new website, which will be c-tsolutions.com. That's c-tsolutions.com. Let's go back and pick up the conversation about defining the corporate data network and identifying the business applications that will reside on the network. Let's agree that there's going to be 3 potential starting points for creating this network. Starting point number one is you're given a site plan or a floor plan of a brand new location. You have the ability of identifying an IT room. You have the ability of identifying the infrastructure being Cat 5, Cat 6, fiber optic, etc. Starting point number two would be that you're given an existing network or an existing location, and you're looking to add a business or multiple business applications to an existing network. You might actually have a legacy configuration where you have an IT room at one side of the building and a voice or telephone room at the other side of the building. Starting point number three is going to be a multi-location company where you're adding a new location to an existing enterprise network. I think we can agree that the process for each scenario has both common and unique characteristics. So let's start with the first situation. We're building a brand new location. We may have a site plan or a floor plan, and I want to identify the differences between the two. A site plan is a campus environment that will have multiple buildings. In a site plan, you're going to deal with connectivity between the buildings, and in a floor plan, you're going to identify every desk, every printer, every low voltage device or business application that will sit on the corporate data network. And in some scenarios, you may deal with a site plan and multiple floor plans. The next thing that we need to identify is the demarcation or demark point. This is where the carrier will terminate their fiber optic cable, and there will be a handoff between the carrier's network and the customer network. There is no hard written rule, but many times the point of demarcation is in the customer's IT room. There's a number of things to consider as we're talking about the demarcation room. First of all, there will need to be a conduit, typically a 1-inch or 2-inch conduit, between the street and the demarcation room. The other question is, if the circuit were to go down and the carrier was required to dispatch a technician at 2 o'clock in the morning, would the carrier have access to their equipment in order to perform repairs on the circuit? The other thing is, in a campus environment, you might want to think about if you're going to have a single circuit service the entire campus environment, or you might have multiple demarcation rooms or multiple circuits with the carrier in order to provide service throughout the campus. In multi-tenant type buildings, there may be a demarcation closet in the hallway, and you might be required to extend Cat 5, Cat 6 cable, or maybe possibly fiber optic into the IT room of your business suite. Okay, the next issue we need to discuss in the demarcation room and in the IT room, if they're separate, is the issue of power. So we all know what an outlet looks like. When I say an outlet, you would think about a single, but most outlets are dual. You've got an upper and a lower. Over the years, I've seen way too many devices, and I'm not just talking about technology devices. I'm talking about situations where maybe a server was plugged into the same outlet as an air conditioner or a fan or some type of a generator. These outlets are only 20 amps. We know what a blackout is when the power completely goes out, but a brownout is where the power is only at a percentage of what its normal rate is. So you might have an outlet that is at 35% of the power. And we don't monitor these outlets, so we don't know what the alternating current is at any given time. So think of a brownout situation kind of like asking a Volkswagen Bug to pull a 20-foot, 6,000-pound trailer. The Volkswagen Bug may be able to pull the trailer for a short distance on flat ground, but we all know it's not going to be too long before the engine gets too hot and just quits. So let's keep it simple. Both blackouts and brownouts can cause data corruption. They cause undue stress on routers and firewalls, switches, servers, and workstations. The best way to prevent data corruption due to power issues is by including a UPS or uninterruptible power source into your data network configuration. Okay, so here we are. We're at the network access gateway. The carrier has brought their fiber optic circuit in. They've terminated on their own equipment. They have the ability to test it. There needs to be a handoff, and the question is, how is the carrier going to hand off the circuit from the wide area network to your local area network or LAN? The options available to answer this question are more numerous than I can cover in a 25 to a 30 minute or even a 2-hour radio show. So we're going to take an SMB or a small to medium sized business. We're going to say that this customer has two computer workstations, a phone, and a point-of-sale terminal. One extremely common mistake is that the customer will take all of these devices, they'll wire them back to a single data switch, and plug them directly into the carrier's modem. So let's talk about why is this a mistake. Let's talk about the potential problems that can occur from this configuration. The very first issue I want to discuss is the firewall. Some carriers are providing some firewall protection. So when you order the circuit, if you are going to expect the carrier to provide firewall security, you need to make sure that, first of all, they have that capability, and second of all, that you order it. But in most cases, carrier modems have very limited, if any, data networking security availability. Second of all, it leads into the programming aspect of the carrier modem. That carrier modem is there for their capability of testing and maintaining the circuit. The carrier modem is not intended for the customer to be able to segment their network. In the configuration I gave, two computer workstations, these should be one network or one subnet, 192.168.1.x. The telephone should be a separate network, 192.168.2.x. And the point of sale terminal should be a third network, 192.168.3.x. There are multiple reasons to segment a data network, one of which is PCI or personal credit card information compliance. We talked about the point of sale terminal, 192.168.3.x. In order to be PCI compliant, this point of sale terminal needs to be segregated from the rest of the network. The next reason to segregate a data network is in broadcast. Every time a new device is plugged in or reset onto a data network, there's a broadcast. It literally goes out to the network and says, "Hey, I'm here, are you there?" There is a computer language connection. And again, this is every time a device is plugged in or it resets. In an environment where you have multiple types of devices on a single network, the broadcast is going to go out to the entire network versus segmenting it into the applications such as business telephone systems or workstations or POS terminals. So in the handoff between the carrier and the customer, we've established a couple of specific needs. We've established the need for data network security, and we've established the need for network segmentation. Traditionally speaking, these applications would be handled by a premise-based network firewall. So a customer would either purchase a firewall on a capital expense or CapEx. They would lease the firewall on an operational expense or OPEX. In addition, they would buy either 1 year, 2 year, or 3 year licensing for the firewall and hire internal IT staff or a managed service provider to manage the device over a term agreement. So here we are once again talking about that term digital transformation. And really what we're looking at is taking what used to be a capital expense, premise-based piece of equipment, and moving it to a cloud-based business application on an operational expense. Earlier in the conversation, I talked about identifying carriers that were available at your business address and identifying the services that they provide. I think it would be every business's dream to be able to find one carrier that could provide everything, and we might get there one day. But some architecture solutions may require two or more carriers. We might have one carrier providing the internet access and a couple of other carriers providing the business applications. So at this point, if you were in charge of building the corporate data network, which philosophy, which direction would you go? Would you go out and buy a premise-based firewall, buy the licensing and manage it yourself? Or would you go out and do some research and find out what business applications were available by the carriers in a cloud-based environment? Okay, let's talk about another business application that will reside on the corporate data network. A while back, I stated that traditionally there was two separate networks. There was a voice network and a data network. We've talked a little bit about the data network, so let's go back and talk about the voice network. Again, we're going to take that same environment, that small to medium-sized business. We're going to take a look at the one phone that is on their network. Okay, I want to get back to this. I want to state that this is one phone. We're a small to a medium type business. We don't have a lot of business applications. So it would be really easy to sit there and say, you know what, I'm just going to go up to the retail store. I'm going to buy an analog phone and I'm going to order an analog line from my carrier. This is a very, very common thought process in the small to medium business. It is perceived that UCaaS or Unified Communications as a Service, and I might do a whole entire segment on the features and capabilities of UCaaS at a later time, but it is thought, it is perceived that it is more expensive, and a lot of small to medium businesses don't need all of the feature capabilities of a UCaaS phone. But let's examine this question from a couple of different angles. Let's take a look at it from the financial standpoint, and then let's take a look at it from the technical or the logical standpoint of view. First of all, I want to talk about the financial side. Now, I will acknowledge that VoIP or UCaaS seats can range from, on the low side, I'm going to say $7 or $8, up to $120 to $150 for call center seats. We're going to first acknowledge that between $7 and $8 and $125 to $150 is a very, very wide range. But we can say that an IP-based or a UCaaS, Unified Communications as a Service, or VoIP, whatever you want to call it, the average seat is between $25 and $35 per month for the term of the agreement. Now, if we want to compare that side by side with the national average cost of an analog line, it's $45 to $55. So in this environment, we're talking about a single phone and a single line. It would not cost you any additional money to move to a unified communications or an IP-based phone system than having an analog line on an analog phone. But if your environment is a little different, let's just say that you have one or two phones and you have two or three lines, you could actually save money on a monthly basis by moving to a unified communications or a VoIP telephone system. Now let's start to discuss the technical side of the argument. One of the benefits of an analog line was the low voltage that the carriers pushed over the line. In the event of a power outage, you could still pick up an analog phone and dial 911. This is why analog lines were required in elevators, to burglar alarms, and fire panels for many, many years. But as we mentioned, the carriers are in the process of retiring the copper analog networks. So what this means to you as the customer is that even though your telephone bill may show a charge for an analog line, that copper wire is going back to fiber optic and being translated to an IP network. So let me say that again. Even though you have an analog phone sitting on your desk, it's going back to a closet where it's going into a translation device and being translated into an IP network. So here we are talking about digital transformation. We're talking about taking legacy equipment and putting it over a fiber optic network on an IP platform. If you want to test this, go to your internet, unplug it, and see if you still have dial tone on your phone. If you do not have dial tone, that analog phone is being translated to IP. But here's the catch. In a power outage type situation, with that analog termination, you do not have the capability of automatically forwarding those calls to a cell phone or to another location. This statement is 100% reversed with a unified communications or an IP-based telephone system. Just to repeat, in the situation of a power or internet outage with a UCaaS phone system, you would be able to pre-program in a cell phone number or the phone number of another location so that the calls would automatically be rerouted. There are so many additional features and capabilities included in a UCaaS or an IP-based phone system, I don't have time to talk about them. One last thing that I will mention today, though, is the $25 to $35 per month average seat for an IP-based phone system includes the actual phone. Now, I know that analog phones are inexpensive up at the local retail store, but if you had a problem with an IP-based phone system, the carrier would do a remote diagnostics. And if the phone was not able to be repaired, they would overnight a brand new phone to you, pre-programmed and ready to go. Once again, my name is Dan Rhodes and my company is CT Solutions, or Connected Technology Solutions. We're a technology architecture company. We design, implement, and manage anything that touches the corporate data network and a few things that don't. We can be reached in Southern Utah at 435 435-359-1057. That's 435-359-1057. In Northern Colorado, it's 970-493-4154. And nationally, it's 888-801-8569. I hope this time has been valuable to you, and I hope you'll join us next week.